It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, Caffeinated Comics. I am your host, John Clark, with me as, I'm going to say, 87% always.
Yes, I'm increasing my value.
Yes, it's my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And the reason Steven's raised 2% is today is 24-hour comic book day.
Yes.
Steven is involved in 24-hour comic book day and is doing this right now while we're recording.
Yes, it's terrible.
Well, the decision was we either do it before 24-hour comic book day starts, and then we're like, I don't know, what's it going to be like?
Yeah.
Or we do it in the middle, which is the way we're doing it, or we do it at the end when you've been up for 24 hours.
Longer than 24, because
you had to get there?
I had to get there, I had to set up, so it'll probably be close to 28, maybe pushing 30 hours by the time I get to sleep.
I don't think I want to talk to you like that.
I don't know how much fun I'd be to talk to, which is why we're doing this now.
Yeah,
instead
like
of
the
tomorrow.
Most tired one we ever did was that Puerto Rico remote, like in the plane going back, and we both just looked at each other like, I don't know.
Did we did it on the plane? No,
we did it all over the place because we did like
we did a
segments
smidge everywhere
over
yeah.
the weekend, but we did like the last segment waiting to get on the plane to go home, and we were both just fried.
We did it in the airport waiting to get on the plane.
We tried.
Did we?
I don't know.
I have to listen to that episode.
You know
again.
What? If you want to, you can go back and listen to that.
Yes.
If you go to our webpage, every episode since the first one is still up there.
It's frustrating. I have an iPhone now, which...
Which is incredible.
Because
yeah. you've had like a flip phone until 2 weeks ago.
For like 10 years. That phone is older than your child. Both of them.
Older than my oldest child?
Yeah. And I put podcasts on it, and I put our podcast on it. All the podcasts we've done aren't listed on it. And same with like Marin and a couple other guys. They only list so much. It's very frustrating because I know Mark Maron's talked to more interesting people than the people that are on the list.
Right. Well, iTunes does like the last 50 or so usually
yeah.
on a podcast. When you subscribe to it, it will keep everything.
Yeah.
So it's not so like Mark Maron, I subscribe to 5-6 years ago when he started, so I can go back because I've already downloaded those.
Right.
But if you're a new subscriber, you can't go back. So again, if you want to listen to our old episodes, they're always free. They're always there. But go to caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com and you can stream them directly.
Can I get them off on my I don't know anything about my these fancy new phones.
Yeah.
Can I go on the internet?
Not through the podcast app, but there's You can go through your browser.
Yeah.
I can also give you the files because you're in the room with me.
To this?
Yeah, I kept them all and then you can put them in your music.
Wonderful.
So you can do that.
All right, let's do that.
It might not be
show.
A bad idea for you to actually have copies of the show that we've been doing
just
for
in case,
years.
Yeah. If anything happens, I'll actually be like, imagine everyone's done this. We've all, anyone who had a computer in college, you know, you write like a paper out and then like the computer crashes and you lose the paper. I've never, ever, if I've had that happen to me, I don't even turn in the paper. I just tell them, it crashed, I'm sorry, fuck it,
habitually,
I can't redo it.
When I'm writing something, if I'm not actually writing something, I'm just clicking save.
Yeah.
I just made it a nervous habit, but I did lose a screenplay once. I lost like 40 pages of a screenplay.
Yeah.
And I had to rewrite it and force myself to do a second draft because it was just gone.
Yeah.
In the end, that screenplay didn't do anything. It was like the one before it got into a festival. The one after it was a finalist in a festival.
Yeah.
That one, nothing. So maybe,
and then,
maybe
you know
it
what?
Wasn't a crime.
And that would tear me apart inside because I would always think it would have gotten if I didn't lose the original. Because I rewrote it and I know I fucked it up. I didn't do as good.
I remembered all the good jokes in it. So I think I actually wrote it better.
Oh,
really? But for this, yeah. And I have these backed up a few times. And actually, Bill Monroe told me. He said, well, you have them backed up? I'm like, yeah, I have the final files. He's like, no, you have to back up everything. You have to back up the GarageBand file. You have
Did
to back
he say
up all
that?
The tracks.
I think I heard that on a podcast he was talking about it before.
He might have said it on the air. Yeah, he said it to me many, many times.
Your backups aren't what you think they are.
And he's been an IT guy since the mid-90s, so he's very much about that. We're having Intelligentsia coffee.
It's so good. We have coffee at the 24-hour complex day thing, which is generally provided by this wonderful lady next door. to us.
Oh, the cupcake place.
The cupcake place.
And the
place.
Name of that, what's the name of that store? She deserves a plug.
She does.
It's next door to you.
I know, but look, I barely know if I didn't know the name of my own store.
You're a fountain of information on this show, aren't you?
I'm going to, and you know what? And this is, I've only been awake since like 8 a.m. Do you know what I mean? Tomorrow,
I've been awake since 6.
You have a child. That's your fault.
Yeah. He got up at 8.
Yeah. Well, yeah. See, I'm like a baby.
You are. You're
I'm like a big baby.
You kind of have the head of a baby.
I do. I want to call it the Sweet Spot, but that's the name of the office that's like 2 doors down from her.
Oh, that's a good name for a cupcake.
Something.
Place.
She's great.
She is very nice.
So I don't know if I assume we paid for it, but she's so nice. She might have given us like a thing, like a nice thing that shoots out coffee. It's great. So anyway, 24-hour comic books day. I thought this was, here's what I know about it. And then you pitch it for me and
yeah,
tell me.
This is not the first year that Chimera's Comics
this
has
is,
done.
Yeah, this
right?
is the second year we did it. Last year we did it. We actually started at 11 p.m. and we started at midnight and went midnight to midnight.
Which
and then,
is crazy.
Insane.
Because it's like,
because you've already been awake a whole day. It's so
yeah,
stupid.
Yeah, it's like you're taking every hour you would be asleep.
Yes.
To do it. At least now you're only going to be up one night.
Right. So this year I said, let's start at 11, and we already fucked up because we really need to start at noon. We need to get at the store at 11, set up, and then start at noon. We got to the store at 10:45, got set up, and people were showing up, and HeroClix was going on, and all kinds of dumb things, because HeroClix didn't get canceled today, and it's like, it's been a nightmare. But here it is. 24-hour comic day is a thing.
You sound like you've been up all night already.
I've had a lot of coffee so far.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't have made you more coffee.
No, it's good. It's good for the show. It's good for me.
You showed up to the show with coffee in your hand, and I was like, oh, I'm already making a French press. You're like, good.
Good. I want more. All right. So 24-hour comic book day, to my understanding, is only a couple years old, and it's put on by the same people that, to my knowledge, put on like Free Comic Book Day. It's supposed to be a late in the year big event for comic book stores to do and run, like Free Comic Book Day, to where it's nationally advertised, people are aware of it. It's kind of like a new holiday.
Yeah, and the research I showed said that the idea of the 24-hour comic, which I think originally wasn't part of a day, a part of a retail thing, came from Scott McCloud, who created Zot and Understanding
Comics.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of
and
sense.
And he sent it as a challenge to Steve Bissett, who was an artist on Swamp Thing, and then Neil Gaiman got involved, and they would publish the results as like backup stories in their books.
Yeah.
And I was part of one in the 90s when I was doing my indie comics that none of you have ever heard of, except for the crossovers that I was not involved in with Crusade Comics. I was part of one at I think the Motor City Con in 96.
Okay.
We all kind of jammed on it. And that was a convention comic, was could you do a comic from Friday to Sunday? And everybody was jamming so hard that I ended up inking backgrounds. Every now and then I would ink backgrounds, but
yeah.
That's the most I've ever done artistically. So as an idea, it's kind of been floating around a while.
Right. Yeah, it's not a new idea.
No, but as an organized event, it's more recent. As you said, you've been open 4 years, and this is the second time you've done it.
Yeah, we tried to do it 3 years ago, and it just never really kind of came together. So then last year we made a concentrated effort to make sure it was something we would do. We'd advertise. We team up with Dave Gonzalez, works at the Port Ministries in Back of the Yards, Chicago.
Yeah, and Dave's been on the show plenty of times.
He's been on shows plenty of times. He partnered up with us last year. He's kind of like our quote-unquote event coordinator, and he helped push it, and we did...
Because he gets excited about things.
He's so excited. He helped us do like a big fundraiser for the port during the same weekend, because we had all these people coming into the store for the event and people coming in just to see what we're doing. And then we do like a raffle for a lot of the businesses in LaGrange donate to the Port Ministries, and then we help raise funds for like a big fundraiser they do right around the same time. So the weird thing and there's a couple things about 24-hour comic book day that's strange, is the first one is that there's something to... where they don't pick a day for it. When Diamond talks to us about 24-hour comic book day, like when they talk to us about Free Comic Book Day, it's always the first Saturday in May. 24-hour comic book day, they don't have like a specific date you're supposed to do it, just a Saturday in October. So we always say, all right, it'll be the first Saturday in October to mirror what Free Comic Book Day is in May. So that's the first thing. So we always pick the first Saturday, but it really could be any time, just a 24-hour period in October at a comic book store, you know, see store for details kind of thing. The second part, and this is something I've never seen, but they mention it all the time, is that any book that's finished in the 24 hours, anyone who completes the, like, challenge or whatever, gets, like, submitted to the Smithsonian or something. You read really? Anything about this?
No, I know, didn't you say Mark Millar was taking submissions, and I've seen websites that will post finished books.
Yeah. And we've talked about before, the ultimate idea, what we'd like to do is... We'd like to take, and we had a couple people complete stuff last year. A couple people did, like, a, you know, an 8-page book or a 10-page book. One guy actually did 24 pages in 24 hours.
Really?
And we wanted to take all the books and kind of, and we have to figure out publishing first. And that's kind of like a hurdle we're working on. But what we'd like to do is publish any book that's completed at our store in 24 hours. Publish as like a thick annual.
Mm-hmm.
During Free Comic Book Day. So, like, every year, Chimera's Comics would have a free comic we would give out, and it would be the comics that were done that previous October.
And that's 7 months later, so that gives you
plenty
of
time to publish it, get it all together, print it, you know, as many as we need. I like that idea. Like I said, it's something we've been kind of working, trying to get a publisher where we won't bankrupt ourselves doing this, you know?
Right.
Because it'd be free giveaway.
Yeah, and you had special guests last year. Gene Ha stopped by.
Yeah, he'll be in at some point today. I talked to him. He actually just got his Kickstarter book just came in, like he just got him in. So we got about 15 copies, I think, at the store of his Kickstarter he brought in. So he'll be in at some point, he said a couple times, because he's doing LaGrange Public Library the same day as doing some kind of event. And he's going to take everyone out for like cheeseburgers afterwards.
That's cool. And that's just down the block from the store.
Yeah, yeah. It's like within walking distance. So he'll be in at some point, probably again tomorrow morning. Sunday morning, I guess it would be. But yeah, like I said, it's an event. It's not as easy as it used to be for me to stay up 24 hours. I've definitely noticed the change from like 22-year-old Steven staying up 24 hours to like 29-year-old Steven.
That's
is like
so sad. You're not even 30 and you're complaining about
I know
not being able to do
and
things.
I can do it, but it's not as easy as it used to be. And that's it's like I'm at the point where it's like I wouldn't say it's a downward slope, but it's definitely much harder to recover than it used to be. It used to be, oh, I can stay up and finish this project for college and blah blah blah, 24 hours, whatever, 48 hours I've done before. And it was terrible, but I could do it. Now it's like this comes up and I'm like, ugh, fuck this. I don't want to do this.
It's not gonna get better.
No, I assume it gets worse every
year.
Yeah,
I will say that there will still be days where you stay up all night anyway, because insomnia doesn't care what age you are.
Yes. But, and this is like forced insomnia. So this is like, I'm like, no, body, you can't go to sleep, which is a lot worse than, well, maybe that's not worse than body saying, no, you're not going to go to sleep right now. Like, I have to make the decision not to go to sleep.
But now, what's your personal project for this?
All right. So,
because people don't know this about you. Is that you are an artist.
Yeah, I don't advertise that too
often. No, you drew our logo.
Yeah, the logo we use
Dave
for
Gonzalez helped design it, but yeah. The actual drawing is you.
Yes.
You paint the windows on Chimera's Comics. So if you've ever gone to Chimera's Comics, have you painted the windows in all three locations?
I did a Hulk in Oak Lawn that's, I think, been taken down since then. And I did most of the Wonder Woman that's at Woodridge. And then Claire, I think, finished it. So I have done a little at all of them. And I think, I don't know what we're going to put in the window next to LaGrange, but it's empty right now. We tore out, there was a Groot in there for a while that a customer of ours had done, and now we're going to change it to, well, I don't know, something else.
I miss that Iron Man. I really, you had the Iron Demon
Man.
In a Bottle Iron Man.
Oh,
like the
yeah,
Bob
the
Layton
big
Iron
Bob
Man. That was,
yeah.
That was
that's
my
what I like
one
to do.
Did.
I like to do the classic stuff, yeah. You know, I did one, the best.
But you also tied to the movie, because I think that was when Iron Man 3
yeah,
was
we
out.
Tried to, like, I put Magneto in the window. He's been in there forever. We put him up when X-Men Days of Future Past came out, I think. Thor was in the door when Dark World came out. Or no, we put that in for the first Thor movie, I want to say. I don't know.
I think it's when you open.
Yeah, we always try to, like, tie it in and, you know, change him up. But, yeah, so the book I'm working on is this. We might have mentioned this on the podcast before. Is that Carmelo wrote a book called Magnificent that I'm drawing and kind of at this point probably co-wrote it because so much has changed from where he had the idea when he was in high school and then I've kind of retooled a couple things. So it's kind of a mix, but...
Is it about finals?
No, but it is about a, basically the gist of the story is, here's a kid, there are no superheroes, and he's the first person that he's aware of that has superpowers. And it's basically, like, growing up and the growing pains that you have as, like, a child and a teenager mirrored with the growing pains of, like, learning how to be a superhero, getting your first superhero fight and all this kinds of things. So I have been drawing this book for a stupid long time, and it should have been done forever ago, but then we decided to open up, like, three stores. So now that we're not playing...
And start a podcast.
That keeps me sane.
And there's usually a family member making you go to their house at some point
weekend. Yeah.
Every time we finish the show, I'm like, so what are you doing? Well, I'm going.
I got to go to this thing. I go to that thing. Yeah, I don't remember.
You've been so busy this year that at the All Yeah Christmas party, which I think we posted pictures. I'm pretty sure we talked about it. You know, Aria's been so good to us. Oh, and they're having their grand opening in New York. So if you're in Hamilton, New York.
Check them out.
Check them out. That's their third store.
It's this... It's today.
It is today. Yeah, in fact, they were posting pictures today. So Art and Franco and Mark Hammond, all
very
good. Yeah,
Mark actually relocated to New York to open the store.
Yeah, and now Kurt Wood's taken over in Skokie, who is another great guy.
I mean, he's a good dude.
I have nothing bad to say about any of those guys. I could lie, and I still wouldn't come up with anything bad to say about those guys. But at their Christmas party, we bought... Mike Mignola was there.
Oh, yeah.
And I was way too intimidated to ask him to come on the podcast, so he's not coming.
Not yet.
So maybe someday. But Rogue Ale did a special Hellboy beer for the party.
That, oh, yeah.
If I had had it then, I probably would have asked him. But you and I and Joe, who's a regular on the show, we all bought these bottles, and Mike signed them. And we said, you know, we're going to have these together. We're going to have a night together.
Yeah.
That was... 10 months ago.
That was in, it's almost been it's more closer to have been a year than not.
It's been so long that we're starting to wonder if the beer is still good.
Yeah, and I feel terrible if it's not good, because I'm sure it was excellent six months ago.
Elliot Serrano had it in front of me at the party. He said, yeah, it's good. So I know that.
Yeah, there you go. So Elliot's endorsed.
And we were like, no, we're going to save them.
We're going to save them because we'll have time in the future.
We're going to save them until they expire.
Right. Then we'll drink them. Then it'll be real Hellboy beer.
Yeah. But that's how little time you've had in the last year, much less doing a podcast, running three stores, and doing this comic.
And I don't remember being this busy before. Like, I imagine at some point I wasn't this busy.
You used to just be in the store all the time.
I used to just be able to do things. Now, time is, like, the most precious thing. It really is, listeners. So, anyway, hopefully... working on the comic, I worked on it last 24-hour comic book day. I think I got 3 pages done. I'm hoping to get 3 to 5 pages done this 24-hour comic book day. The book, we're launching a Kickstarter today for it, so Monday it should be live. We'll have a video explaining the whole process, all the other nonsense. So we've got that, and the... So that's what I'm working on. Next year, I think me and John have talked real quick.
You mean me?
John, John Clark, yes. Yeah. Real quick, it's themagnificentproject.com is where all the information for the Kickstarter and what the book is and what it looks like, and we got promotional art and all that nonsense up there. Me and John have talked because I want to do...
I'm in the room. You can talk. You don't have to talk about me in the
third
person.
I'm telling a story to the listeners.
But I'm in the room.
All right. Well, you and me had talked, and we had said, apparently I had this idea last year, is I wanted to do an actual 24-page, 24 comic in 24 hours. And last year I posted a video you had made about...
Well, I did a video a long time ago. I think this one I did on my own, but I used to make stop-motion videos with Mike Drucker a lot.
Yeah.
And Mike's been on the show a few times, and you guys know he's a writer for The Tonight Show now. So he's funny.
Good on him. Are you still watching The Tonight Show?
Yeah, from time to time. I'm watching The Tonight Show and Colbert and Trevor Noah on The Daily Show.
The Tonight Show is not...
It's Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, that's Fallon. He writes Fallon Show?
Yeah, Mike writes for Fallon, and Mike Brum, who's also been on the show, writes for Colbert.
Okay, Colbert, I'm still... I don't watch Jimmy Fallon... I like Jimmy Fallon better as a talk show host than I ever liked him as a sketch guy on SNL.
I agree.
And I like him. I don't have time to watch TV. And because if I can't watch it in the store, I don't know.
Well, the great thing about late night talk shows now, once they do something good, it's online the next day.
And that's what I do.
If it's good, it's gone viral.
Right. And that's all I see. I see Jimmy Fallon, him and this guy got in big plastic balls and like rolled around the room and with beer drinking or something. You know, he's always doing crazy games and
stuff. Right. But Mike and I used to do these stop motion videos back when he and I were both doing stand up, and one of them, which actually he liked so much that he played it at one of our shows. We used to do a show called Writer's Room at Rafifi's, which is now gone, but it was a room that like Bobby Tisdale and Eugene Merman really built, and it was huge at the time. But we used to do a monthly show there, and he played it like over the PA as a piece. But I had done it. I had done a piece, and I'll link. I'll put this on the Facebook page. But I had re-edited the audio from Stan Lee's introductions of the Fantastic Four and Iron Man cartoons of the 90s into just this pitch that goes everywhere. Because when he's lost, he just throws in a character. And at one point, Galactus is wanted by the police for murder.
Yeah,
and
like, there's
and the Thor has to do an operation on a Sue Storm's father, and animated that with figures. That led to another idea, which I won't tell you about now because I want to do it. But we originally were going to do another piece about Stan Lee that we workshopped in the shop, and I wrote it as a sketch, and we were going to shoot it as a video, and that never quite came together. And then you brought up the idea of actually doing it as the comic for
24-hour comic day. Yeah.
Which I think is a great idea. I think if we do it, we will post it. We'll post the pages.
Oh, yeah.
As part of the show.
Yeah, and theoretically, like I said, it'd be nice to have to finally maybe catch up and be ahead of work instead of always like trailing behind it.
Yeah, good
as
luck
I
with
seem
that.
To do. Yeah, I don't know if that's a thing. You know, people who are more successful or more wise than me would answer that question. But
people
be
that
nice...
are more successful get other people to do the stuff that they don't want to do.
Yeah, maybe that's what I need to do. I need to outsource all this crap. But yeah, I'd ideally like to like 24-hour comic book day is really cool because while you're making the comic, every time you finish a page, you can take a scan or a picture with your smartphone and instantly upload it. So every hour, whatever, however you break it down, how much you're supposed to do during the day or whatever, you could just post this stuff like online. It could be and is a really fun event. It's a nightmare to stay
awake
that long.
And you can just tweet pictures now. So it's not even like go to my website every hour anymore.
You can follow the store on Twitter and boom, here's a photo every hour being posted for, you know, what we're working on. You know, so like I said, we've got two for sure, regulars at our store that have come back this year that were here last year. So we do have a good group, and this year we have a dozen artists. Last year we had, I think, 6 to 8. This year there's 12 of them.
Wow.
So it's, you know, it's getting to be a more substantial event every year, which is nice. You know, the idea that it builds and builds and builds every year as it becomes more regular, just like Free Comic Book Day did. So yeah, it is an interesting event, and I think... And you might know this because since you've done a little bit more research, Scott McCloud's original idea, I guess, for this was that you show up, you start the 24 hours, say at noon, and you from concept to finished product. You don't show up with a script beforehand. You don't any work beforehand.
Yeah, you do a whole comic. So you spend the beginning of 24-hour comic day going, well, what's it going to be?
Yeah,
and plotting it out. And I'm sure it's done faster.
Yeah.
You know, you probably don't write a full script.
Sure.
And then do tight pencils and then do inks. It's probably loose as just like, here's the idea. Now here's the panel breakdown. I'll figure out the dialogue when it's penciled.
Right. I don't even know if people do more than just pencil it. I mean, we had a couple people, like one guy last year did watercolors, but only did 8 pages. And then there's different rules if it's a digital comic, I guess. Like, there's either less work or more work. I can't remember, but there's something specifically.
Are there people doing digital?
Yes, there is a guy in the store. He's got his computer and like a tablet set up, so he's doing a digital comic.
Oh, cool.
But there is some rule about doing digital comics where it's like, I think it's supposed to be more... I don't know why that would be. Maybe because it's easier,
faster.
Yeah. So maybe it's supposed to be like 48 pages instead of 24.
Oh, God. 48 pages.
Do you think it's supposed to be 22 pages like a regular comic, or is it supposed to be 24 pages?
Well, it's supposed to be 24 because you're supposed to be doing a page an hour.
Yeah.
So it tracks. And I mean, comics have gone from 24 to 22 to 20 to 18. I mean, back in the day, they were all 8 because you'd have like 5 stories in every issue.
Yeah.
So there's never been a set
number.
Exact number of pages for a comic book.
But they figure about a page an hour.
About a page an hour,
yeah. And it's an interesting exercise. You know, me and John were talking before the show, we've never really done a podcast. I mean, you've talked to creators on the show, but we've never really done a podcast about making a comic or working on a comic.
Yeah, so far, the one artist we've talked to on the show has been Graham Nolan.
Yeah.
Other than that, we've had writers.
Right.
So, and, you know, Graham was great, but we haven't really broken down a lot of the artness about it. We've also had Cesar Animate on.
Yeah.
But I think we talked more about, like, toys with him because he was a toy designer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we don't talk about art as much as we probably should.
Yeah, and I think it's something we both, you know, you've written comics, you've actually been published, you know, so it's like you've written all kinds of stuff, but we have enough of an idea and enough of a not an idea to the point where it's like, and we were talking earlier on the show, or before the show, I should say, you know, if you're writing, you know, Marvel hires Jonathan Hickman, who does a book for Image that gets him really popular, and then he goes and he writes for Marvel. And then I, as not a writer, would be interested to see, do you think, like, artists, or, I mean, writers have, all right, I know exactly if I get hired by Marvel, you're not going to do what you want to do. Like, if I got hired by Marvel to write, I'd want to write Avengers. But probably not going to happen. But if I did get hired by Marvel, and they're like, all right, you have to write Ghost Rider. Here's a character I don't like, I don't know anything about. Now, do you have to, assuming no matter what you have to write, you have to do research. But you think a lot of these guys, like you were saying, Walt Simonson, already had his Thor story written.
Yeah, well,
in
Walt
college.
Simonson always wanted to do Thor. So back, he came up with the whole Ragnarok Surtur idea in college. And he didn't get Thor until the 80s. And he was doing work for DC in the 70s. You know, he had done all of Manhunter with Archie Goodwin in the 70s. So he didn't get to that. So yeah, a lot of people walking around with their perfect story. Ed Brubaker recently retired from the Big Two. He's only going to do creator-owned comics, and he said his one regret was that he never got to do Spider-Man. So he probably has a Spider-Man story.
Yeah.
But then, for the most part, there's also, while you're working on it, stuff comes up. Grant Morrison, his Batman run, one of the reasons it was so many different titles was he was going to leave. And right before he left, he was like, oh, wait, I have an idea. What if Dick Grayson's Batman for a long time and Damian's his Robin?
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, he sells, so it's like, instead of doing a Batman, let's start a new title.
They kind of just like,
and then he's like, well, now I'm done. Oh, wait a minute. What if there was, like, an international team of Batmans?
Yeah.
I could do that. Now it's Batman Incorporated. So when he took the Batman job on, he wasn't thinking of Batman Incorporated.
Yeah.
Like, he had the Black Glove story and the Ninja Man Bats ready to go. And things evolve as you're on there. Scott Snyder has said that he and Capullo thought they were out of ideas a couple of times.
Yeah.
And then they were like, oh, wait a minute, Endgame, that's a good idea. And, you know, and now it's...
Yeah, and I understand a lot of the, as you work, more stuff comes up. And as you, if you're doing a creative job, I feel like you'll be more creative if you just go to an office every day. Do you know what I mean? If you did 9 to 5 at a cubicle. And, mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? That I don't think is... Yeah, I mean, you're writing, so that's a different thing.
Well, I do
both,
yeah.
Yeah, but, I'm a weird mix, I think.
Because I've made most of my living from advertising, and I go to an office, but I sit and I write.
Yeah, so you're doing creative stuff all day, so I think it keeps going.
Advertising is a very weird mix to begin with. You know, we've talked to Steve Klausner on the show, Chris Prunkle has been here, and
it's a different animal.
It's an uneasy alliance of business and art and creativity. But yeah, but most creative people are working at home, or, you know, they're working on commission. They're working on the project. So it's when they decide their own hours and they work when they work. And you see a lot of people talk about like Dan Slott, I remember, was tweeting during the last New York blackout. He was like, oh, I'm in the middle of writing. I think he was writing Amazing Spider-Man 700.
Yeah.
And the power went out. And he was like, I got to get this out. He's like, a candlelight.
It still has to get done.
Paper.
Yeah.
And I always hear about artists and writers saying, like, oh, shoot, I got this convention coming up. And that's going to kill 3 days. How am I going to catch up now?
Right.
So you do tend to be able to keep your own hours. But everyone has a deadline. Most comics are at least the monthly deadline.
Right.
And a lot of editors will say, well, give me this many pages every week. And I think the absolute concentrated, intensified version of that is this 24-hour comic book day.
Yeah, and, you know, I follow Pablo Rivera's got a good blog. I follow. He's one of the artists. He was on Daredevil for a long time.
Yeah, he's really good.
He did a Valiant crossover called The Valiant. Chris Somney's got a nice blog I follow, and a couple of these guys
also did Daredevil.
Yeah, yeah, actually,
and
both of them.
Actually, I just heard that Somney and Wade are now going to do Black Widow now that they're leaving Daredevil.
Oh, really?
They're going to launch a new Black Widow series.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to follow that too. But basically, a lot of these guys, Paul Rivera, more than most, is pretty good about talking about process, and he talks about his daily routine and what's expected of him and how much you can make. And, you know, he's very transparent about the whole process, because there is kind of this mystification of what it's like to work on comics or make a comic for a month. And he's basically saying, like, look, you know, you're pretty much a page a day. You got to get a page done a day. You know, you really don't have a lot of time on the weekends. Like, it's kind of an all day thing. Like, you know, he broke down what his schedule is that you really kind of have to hold yourself to, because all these guys are working from home. But yeah, I do think it's something that's interesting where, like you said, it's, you know, I've done it too, where I was doing it for a while and I've kind of lost track of my life, so I haven't done it recently, but Marvel or DC or pretty much all the companies come out with like blank covers a lot.
Right.
And I'll use that as a challenge, is like, all right, well, here's a blank cover for the new Star Wars book. You know, all right, imagine that they said, all right, Steven, here, do this, do the cover for the new Star Wars book. What would my cover look like? Because that's pretty much what would happen if you were working freelance. They'd be like, all right, you got to do this cover for Marvel.
Yeah, and you have to come up with the concept. And those blank covers, you see them at conventions all the time, because people just take them to Artist Alley.
Right, and that's the idea forum. But I, you know, it's a nice challenge as an artist to kind of look at it as like, all right, well, throw yourself a curveball. Here's a blank cover for Ghostbusters. Who would ever, you know what I mean? It's like, unless you're like a real big fan of Ghostbusters, you would never do a Ghostbusters cover.
And that gets back to your earlier point, is if you want to break into the industry, you take whatever book you can get.
Yeah.
You know, the first book I did was like a Korean type samurai.
Yeah.
Because
that you were writing?
Because the guy, yeah, it was called The Horseman, and Machindo did it and Buzz did it. But it was the owner of the comic store where I was working on had this idea, created it, wasn't a writer, so he didn't know how to script, so I scripted it.
Yeah.
And what you need to do with those is you find your way in. You got to look, you look at these things and you go, okay, this is not a character I like. Like, as you said with Avengers, like, if somebody came to me and said, who do you want to write? I would say Batman and Spider-Man.
Yep.
But
do you think you could write Fantastic Four?
Yeah, I would love to write Fantastic Four, yeah.
And, you know,
as you were saying before, I have ideas that I've been carrying around for
that you wrote,
decades
yeah.
for Fantastic Four. And back in the 90s when Fantastic Four was not selling, like before they sold it to Image,
yeah.
And I was doing the independent comic, that was the book I was gunning for. I was like, you know what, they're not going to give me Spider-Man, but they might give me Fantastic Four.
Right, if they're
looking
to pitch it to, yeah.
Yeah, because this book's not selling right now.
Yeah, I think it's something, that's the kind of thing I always think of. Like I said, I could probably write Avengers. At this point, complete creative freedom, anyone could write anything. But something like Fantastic Four or Iron Man is so technical, and it's a lot of the science is like, just make up some baloney about transistors or whatever.
But you have to figure out what about that character appeals to you, and there should be something. I mean, Mark Waid wrote one of the best Fantastic Four series ever, and he initially turned it down. Tom Brevoort called him up and said, do you want to do it? And he said, I don't really have an angle on the Fantastic Four. I'm not that into them. And then Tom Brevoort said, yeah, well, I already signed Mike Ringo. And he's like, I love Mike, because they had done The Flash together.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to work with Mike again. I'll figure it out. And then he did one of the best runs that anyone's ever did, because he sat down and said, okay, what about this book makes it work for people? And what about what makes it work appeals to me?
Yeah.
And that's the key to unlocking it. Like, Ghost Rider is a perfect example. I wouldn't want to do Ghost Rider either, but if somebody came to me and said, do you want to do Ghost Rider,
you'd figure out how to do it.
I'd take a long, hard look at the character. Like, what is it about this character? Okay, he's got like a werewolf thing going on, because he's kind of like the Hulk, where he switches into this destructive personality.
Yeah.
That could be a way in. It's a world of demons and the supernatural, which is different than most superheroes, so that could be your way in.
Yeah.
Those are usually the best ways in, and you can see in someone's first issue of an arc, you can see them figuring out what their mission statement is.
Right.
What I find doesn't work, and you see people do it all the time, is like, I'm not interested in this character, but ooh, I have a character. And now the established character is going to meet this character, and then the whole book's going to be about my character. You see that yeah. all the time. Especially happens.
It's usually pretty horrific too.
It usually doesn't work. When it does work, it's like a villain. And then, you know, villain. We did a whole show about villains. Sometimes they take off. Sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
But I also find a lot of times it's a girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
I was reading a bunch of runs of Spider-Man, like disparate runs, where I was like, oh, I never read this run from the late 90s. This is when I quit, so let me read all these issues. And then I would finish that and go, oh, this run from the early 70s, I haven't read that, of Peter Parker, so I'm going to read that. And when you look at, like, the different eras and the different writers, they're so concerned with, like Peter's so into, like, this girl in his class that just showed up.
Yeah.
And he is all about her. And then the creative team shifts. That girl's gone.
Never, ever mentioned again.
Yeah, it's like, who saw Deb Whitman recently?
Yeah. And I think that's interesting, too, because I think that's a fine balance between, you know, how long are you going to be on that book? How long, like, it's Hickman's interesting because it's... He had such a long play for Fantastic Four, stuff that yep. he's still playing with in Secret Wars.
Right, and he had a beginning, yeah, and that's the interesting thing, because he had a beginning, middle, and end to that book, and he said it was going to be 3 years. It was 3 years.
Yeah.
There are two omnibuses, and it's everything.
Yep.
They started a second series, and he's like, okay, all my side plots are going in this series, so it was still the same story.
Yeah.
But, you know, some things changed a little bit as he went on.
Sure, sure. But I think it's the long play of how long do you think you're going to be on the book than to wrap up right. your ideas.
But then again, on the other hand, he finishes Fantastic Four, it's all done, but then he takes over Avengers and he's like, you know what, here's an idea in Fantastic Four, I can keep playing with that. And then it all builds up to Secret Wars, and Secret Wars, and the first issue of Secret Wars is about the Fantastic Four, who didn't have a book anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that whole first issue is the Future Foundation,
yeah.
which he created.
And that's interesting. You think that they would have canceled Fantastic Four. I mean, they didn't, right? He was on Fantastic Four. The numbers went up for sales. Mm-hmm. And then now they canceled it because of the Fox nonsense or whatever they're doing. But, like, right. you think they would have canceled it if he was on it still?
Maybe. I mean, they gave him a bigger book. So yeah. that's Fantastic Four sold really well when he was on it, but it was never going to sell what Avengers is selling.
No,
no. And they gave him Avengers. And, you know, they gave it to Fraction, who was another A-lister, who started out with a great premise. It got very wobbly, but he didn't get the numbers Hickman was getting, and then they replaced him with James Robinson, who's also another great writer.
Yeah.
And again, it didn't get the numbers, so it wasn't selling that well anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone knows it's because of Fox, and now the movie's bombed, and they're going to let it sit for a while. And they're not letting these characters die, because in this whole Marvel Now, which is not Marvel Now, it's this whole post-Secret Wars.
Whatever this is, yeah.
You know, we've got Thing on an Avengers team, we've got Johnny on another Avengers team.
And Sue and Reed are in the wind.
Right, well, they'll show up somewhere, so these four characters are going to be around. It's just Marvel doesn't want a product that says Fantastic Four on it right now. And in hindsight, probably a smart idea, because that's one of the biggest bombs of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess, like I said, that's kind of the tricky thing. You know, you got Bendis, you know...
Well, Bendis is now going to Iron Man.
To Iron Man off of X-Men.
And Iron Man's another example because, you know, on a real high after Fraction, who took it over after the first Iron Man. But then the next couple of runs, you know,
nothing.
Kieran Gillen's Iron Man didn't do that well. And then that Superior Iron Man didn't do that well. So they realize, of course, Iron Man's our A-lister because of Robert Downey Jr. So we need to put our A-list talent
on
it. Yeah.
And that's interesting,
and it'll probably be a really high-selling book. I'm sure you ordered that first issue heavy.
Yeah, you know what? So that's interesting. This Wednesday, Batman Eternal, Batman and Robin Eternal, Amazing Spider-Man number one's coming out, and Iron Man number one, all on the same day. Iron Man is the book we ordered the most of.
More than Spider-Man. Because Spider-Man's still slot. So
it
you're
is.
Not gonna you're not gonna lose any readers. I'm coming back for it.
Yeah, pretty much we'll relink the book, so anyone who's pulling it before will get it now.
Okay.
But we just kept it the same, because it's the same creative team. But Iron Man is such a shift, that might be a book where it wouldn't hurt to have that number one on the shelf for the
right.
next 4 months.
Right.
You know? And the Batman Eternal is kind of its own mess, because it's a weekly book. You know, I can't stockpile 52 issues in a year
on
the shelf.
Batman Eternal was entertaining, but I got really fatigued by the end of that.
It's just, the weekly books are
well, and also,
crazy.
It's one thing to be a weekly book. It's another thing to be a weekly book within a family where there's other books every single week.
Yeah.
So,
there's never a week where there's not a Batman book.
No, the problem I had with Batman Eternal was like, they pitched it as this is going to be the main continuity book, and then the other books are either going to have their own separate continuities, or they're going to tie in. But like the big things are going to happen in Eternal and spill out.
Yeah,
that didn't really happen. All Eternal did was spin off a couple of new books that have since been canceled.
Yeah, it's really kind of should have been its own thing, and it kind of ended up being that. Like on its own, it's a good story.
Like I said, it was entertaining. I didn't necessarily need 52 of them.
Right. And that's
I certainly didn't need
them
in 1 year. I think Batman and Robin is going to be shorter. I think it's only a six,
I think it's
a 6 month. Yeah. I think it's like 24. I think it's a 6 month weekly. But man, I'm not looking forward to signing up on that. I'm already reading too much Batman.
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, those are interesting projects too. The weekly books where it's, you know, the first one that I remember was it 52?
Yeah. I mean, going way back, Action Comics tried it in the 80s.
Yeah.
They changed Action Comics to Action Comics Weekly. And it was at a point where Superman's 50th anniversary had just happened, so Superman was kind of on a high. It was like the end of that John Byrne run.
Yeah.
So Superman was selling really well, so they tried it, and it was kind of an anthology title where they would just do... Like, they did, like, it was a big book, too. They would do, like, 4 12-page stories.
Yeah.
So, like, Green Lantern was canceled at that time, so they moved Green Lantern over to Action Comics. So it was kind of like a Superman and then, like, 3 backups.
Okay.
And then I think there was just, like, the D-list stuff. I think, like, Challenge of the Unknown
popped up. They just threw
other
things in.
Or
Checkmate. Infinity Men or
yeah,
something.
That kind of stuff. But it didn't sell. But then 52 was the first of the modern ones. And 52 sold really well because they put their A-list writers on it.
Yeah, and it was really well received too. I mean, yeah. They've did like Trinity and Countdown and all this other crap came out.
Yeah, they didn't do as well. 52, I remember I would fall off every now and then, and I just kept hearing it was good. Yeah. So I would go back, and fortunately the big comic stores always had extra copies. So I'd be like 6 weeks behind, and I would just buy the six books off the rack, and I kept up with it. And it was a great story, but they've been so... Last year, there was Batman Eternal. There was also Future's End.
Yeah.
And there was a third one?
Yeah, what was the third? See, that's the thing. There's too many of them. It's like, you can't even keep track.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, I've heard enough good stuff about 52. There's an omnibus, and it's like, I think it might
be
out of print, but I'm probably going to get it because I've heard... Everyone who's talked about it said they liked it.
I have the complete series if you want to try it.
Yeah.
I'll lend you like a...
I might just maybe try the
issues.
Trade
yeah.
and then... Switch the omnibus if I like it.
Right. But, you know, but that was a book. That's one of the things, going back to 24-Hour Comic Day, is Keith Giffen did the breakdowns for that. But he did very light breakdowns.
Yeah.
There were 4 writers on it. And it was,
right.
it was Mark Waid, Grant Morrison, Greg Rucka, and Jeff Johns. And they each took different subplots. There was nobody that did that book. And it was...
The only one, actually, who worked on every single issue is J.G. Jones. He did the covers.
All right, yeah.
All
and
the
as
covers,
I said, Giffen did the breakdowns, but a lot of times you couldn't tell because I think they were very loose.
Yeah.
And they even lost their editor in the middle of it.
Really?
I believe it started with Steve Wacker, and Marvel grabbed him to do Brand New Day.
Oh.
Because Marvel's idea at the time was, hey, Amazing Spider-Man sells really well. Spectacular and Web and Spider-Man don't sell. So why don't we just do Amazing...
Three times anyway,
instead of doing 3 books.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, who can get that out on that schedule? Hey, that guy at DC has been doing it every week.
Yeah, he might know what he's doing.
Yeah, so they went to Steve Wacker and they were like, how about you not do this book of these old D-listers in DC and you do Spider-Man?
Yeah, and who wouldn't say no to that? You
right,
know?
So, and that became, and Brand New Day was fantastic as well. But going back to 24-Hour Comic Book Day, there is nobody that can do that. So to tell artists that to do 24 pages in a day, if
yeah.
it was easy to do, one guy would have done 52 because that'd be working one day a week.
Right. And that's interesting. And kind of like you said, going back to 24-Hour Comic Book Day, and the majority of the people I read about or they talk about making comics, it's about a page a day. Maniacs like John Byrne, who can fuck off, who I love John Byrne, but he says... He can pencil, and because he inks and pencils his own stuff.
Right.
And I think he said like 3 pages a day.
That's what Kirby used to do, and Romita Jr.
Yeah, and it's...
Can do that fast. But
unbelievable.
But they've been doing it so long.
Yeah.
Those 3 people, especially Kirby, Byrne and Romita, they've gotten their own shorthand for their style. And as you see, as all three of those artists got older, they got more and more stylized.
Yep.
Where they got to a point where it was like, this is the way I'm going to draw a car. This is the way I'm going to draw a building. Yep. This is the way I'm going to draw a horse.
They're so good at what they're doing. Yeah.
They do it in such their way. They're not going and getting 5 references of a horse from different angles so they can draw it just right. Yeah. They're like,
and that's
drawn 100 horses.
Yeah.
So here's my horse.
I know what a yeah. And that's the real impressive bit of it is, you know, if I got a script and it's like, all right, you got to draw, we're in Washington, D.C. for a bit, then we're going to go to Chicago, and then we're going to go to a farm, and we're going to do these 3 different things, and then for good measure, we're going to go to space. That takes me forever just to find, all right, I got to see. What does a farm look like? What do I need to draw? What does a tractor look like? What kind of farm is it? You know, is it a dairy farm, animal farm, or whatever? Let's go to the city. You got to do city references. You tell John Romita Jr., give him the same script. Oh, yeah, sure, whatever. He'll draw a tractor. I kind of know what that looks like. I can fake it. Maybe he'll look at a reference for something he maybe isn't. But for the majority, like those guys, like they're so good at it. They visually just know exactly what everything looks like.
Well, Kirby used to design on the page. He didn't do separate pages of character designs and machines and stuff. And and that's one of the reasons he was such a genius, because his stuff didn't look like anybody.
Nobody. And you couldn't even, you see like Bruce Timm will try to ape him or whoever. Yeah. And they do good jobs, and it's nothing quite like what Kirby was doing. That's the other thing about John Byrne, this question. He would say, if I'm working on a page, I'm all over the place. I'll do this panel, back to the bottom, up, back to the top. John Byrne would be like, well, I start at the top left corner, and then I finish in the bottom right corner. He starts at one end and finishes it at the other.
Like he's writing.
Like he's writing. And it blows my mind, because it doesn't make any sense.
Well, you said last year you got done 3 pages.
Yes.
Speaking of speed, was that because you're also running it, and you're getting up and running around and talking to people?
Yeah.
Or is that your speed? I'm very slow. Okay.
At my best, I'm doing maybe a page a day. The 3 pages I got done during Free Comic Book Day were pages that were in various stages of completion. They already broken down and what the pages were going to look like. And it was basically getting from, all right, this is a page I've been fuddling with for a while. Sit down for 3 hours, crank it out, get it done. So because there's so many other things going on at the store, I don't really have the time to get 24 pages done. And these 24 pages in 24 hours... basically, these are like a little bit more than breakdowns, and people
are usually pretty loose.
Yeah, they're very loose. The pages I'm trying to do are, all right, this has to be ready for an inker, so everything has to be perfect. So basically, a lot of it in like today, the rest of today and tomorrow morning, will be getting pages done that are real close to completion just to check them off the list. Mm-hmm. We've got 64, 65 pages, something like this. I've got about 35 in the can. You know, if I can get up to 40 by tomorrow, awesome. And then 20 more pages to do between now and like January.
Now, what'd you learn from doing the pages last year that you're going to do today differently?
Nothing that I'll be doing differently. A lot of the mistakes I made, because I'm redrawing so much of this book from when we first started, will be, all right, I learned, how to save time with backgrounds. A lot of it is like, all right, I'm going to take a picture of something. Brian Hitch does this. Greg Land is a notorious tracer.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of guys, if you're doing a background and it's realistic, they're taking a photo, and then they're taking that photo, putting it under the comic page, and then putting a light behind it, and they're light boxing it. Brian Hitch does this all the time, and the hundreds of other guys do it. And it's basically a quick way, all right, this is what the background looks like, and then they change everything for what the story needs. So if there's a big fight in the city, you pencil in the buildings that aren't going to be destroyed, and then the buildings that are going to be destroyed, you draw those as destroyed buildings. That's the kind of stuff, the background saving thing, just to kind of speed the process up. Like I said, it's something where it's to just see, the events are nice because it's more of like a social event of, hey, here's a dozen artists in the store. Everyone's just kind of spitballing, joking around. Drawing a comic is, hey, sit alone in a room for hours and don't talk to anybody and just stare at this page. The 24-hour event's cool because it's, you're sitting in a room with a bunch of other artists and you guys are all kind of spitballing. It's like a party. And that's a unique environment to work in versus the, all right, I'm going to lock myself in my bedroom for 12 hours and sit here and just draw and listen to podcasts and, you know, watch bad movies, you know?
Yeah, that's what it was like at Artisom when Caesar was on the show, was we were all kind of together. And I had a laptop, so I was writing. But it was this kind of social thing because everybody's kind of on the same level and you're kind of feeding off that same creative energy. And that's what you want.
Yeah.
As I was saying about advertising, it's this uneasy merge of commerce and creativity. And obviously it all depends on what place you're in, what the culture is like, who you're working with.
Right.
But I've been in places where that needle's been all over the place.
And it's interesting because you remember like years ago they talk about like the Marvel offices. It used to be a bunch of artists in a room.
The bullpen,
sitting at desks all drawing. That's really kind of cool. And then Marvel Company, because like you said, the business end was like, well, what are we paying for all this office space for? Office space in New York is crazy expensive. These dummies can all do this at home. And then they shut the offices down and Jack Kirby moved to the West Coast.
Yep.
And then all these guys would just work at home. And then there's no, it's not a community
it
anymore.
It also made them easier to go across the street and ask DC for work.
Right. And that's what it's interesting. Like I said, now it's to the point where there is no one's working in an office downtown in the city. There's not a dozen guys sitting in a room drawing a comic book downtown right now.
Yeah, you know? You only get that at conventions and art studios.
I mean,
there was a proliferation of them in the 90s of like guys banding together and getting office space and starting art studios.
Yep.
And a lot of Image was that way. I mean, when Image started, basically each of the founders created their own studio and then guys kind of grew out of that.
Jim
Lee would create 7 books. He couldn't draw them all.
Yeah.
He would draw them his main book.
And then you'd have a bunch of dudes drawing his book.
His other books. And then every now and then one of those guys would bubble up and become a superstar in their own
Michael
right.
Turner, his entire Aspen was just like that, where he kind of oversaw all these different guys working on these different books who all kind of drew like Michael Turner.
Right. You know, Mike was a house style. The way in the 70s, everyone kind of drew like this mix of John Buscema and John Romita with Kirby style layouts.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, it's like, I don't like this, Mike Diodato Jr. I don't really like.
Yeah, they had to credit him as Mike Diodato Studios.
Yeah,
in the 90s, like back when he was doing Wonder Woman. I remember that change in the credit because he had so many guys drawing like him.
And it's still like that.
And there are rumors that there are whole issues that he doesn't touch.
Yep, and he, you know, like you said, maybe he breaks them down or just kind of oversees them.
Or he's approving it.
Yep, or he approves it, but that's the thing where it's just like, you know, Mike Diodato's going to be on this book, and it's like, well, it's not going to be him then because he's got a room of guys.
But what's your page rate if you're paying all those guys?
Yeah, I'm sure he's doing it. He has to be doing something else.
So what are you hoping, just as a final question, what are you hoping by the end of tomorrow? As you said, you hope to have a few more pages in the can.
Yeah. Like I said, best case scenario, I get, you know, 3 to 5 pages done by tomorrow. I'd like to not lose my mind. I'd like to not kill Dave Gonzalez or Carmelo at the end of this 24 hours. And then the trick is because we end at 11 a.m. and I have to work Monday. So Sunday at 11 a.m. we end, and then Monday I have to start work again. I have to stay up Sunday so I don't fuck up my sleep schedule even more. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't go home, go to bed for 8 hours, then wake up at 9 o'clock, and then be up all night. I have to, like, stay awake through Sunday. Yeah. So I might take, like, a 2-hour nap, but I don't really know what the best... I'm going to, in the next 24 hours, come up with, like, a good formula.
Or you could take Unisom a couple of times and sleep for 16 hours.
Yeah, there's an idea.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
All right, so I've been talking about this for a while. Greatest in the world this week. I have a long commute. And for years I've been saying, oh, I really should take advantage of this commute and like get like audiobooks or listen to podcasts in the car. So I went to the Chicago Public Library, which was a whole bunch of hoops to jump through because I haven't changed my address and all this other nonsense. But I got audiobooks in the car. And it is awesome to have a book in the car that you don't have to read, you just listen to. That is awesome. What's terrible is, have you ever read Brave New World?
No, I started it and put it down.
It's a terrible book. It's fucking awful. And I don't know what year it was written in. I assume like the 30s
or the
40s.
Yeah.
So I get maybe at the time why people like this book, but fuck that book. It's terrible.
It's like 1984 by George Orwell.
Yeah, and see, this is how dumb I am.
Another book you can't get through.
I'll be like, oh, I want to read these books that I've heard all this about, like, you know, Fahrenheit 451 I read in high school, but I don't remember. I'll read, 1984. I'll read that, see what the big deal is. Terrible. What is awesome is Jurassic Park is an awesome book.
I've never read it.
It's a lot like the movie, obviously.
Is it close to the movie? Was there a lot changed?
It's a lot more. Well, I'm only like 2 or maybe 3 chapters in, and it's great. And there's enough things different to keep it interesting. But I've read online, you know, oh, this is different, this is different. You know, it's similar enough. But it's excellent. And it's I hate the radio because I hate commercials and that's all the radio is anymore.
That's why podcasts are great, aren't they, everyone?
No commercials. So for a while I was doing podcasts when I got the phone, which was nice because I was listening to like some of Chris Hardwick's stuff, listening to Marc Maron. I was re-listening to episodes we did that I completely forgot about, or episodes that I haven't listened to that I wasn't even on. So, but the books are nice too because it's like, so I didn't read it, obviously, but I listened to all of A Brave New World. I did the whole book in like 4 days or 5 days or six days because it's like I have a 40-minute to an hour commute each way. So it's like you get so much done. And like I said, I'll be done with Jurassic Park by the end of this week, and I'll be able to be on the next book and the next book, and I'll finally be able to go through and get to all these books. I have a pile of comic books that I'm trying to get through at the apartment. When am I ever going to have time to actually read a book?
I find if you're not on the train, and I have a long commute too in the car. If you're not on the train, you're not getting them done. I joined Audible a while ago. Actually, Renee joined it, and then I just picked
what
it up.
What is Audible?
Audible is Amazon runs it, but it's all audiobooks. Okay. And you sign up for a monthly fee. They give you one free book a month. And then I think you get discounts on other books. But I tend to space it out where I do that one book a month, and the rest of the month I'm doing podcasts or I'm listening to music. I've been doing a ton of nonfiction. Most of the books that I have recommended on the show
are audiobooks.
Have been audiobooks. A lot of biographies, which
I
like.
Jim Henson one you were talking about.
The Jim Henson one I did on Audible. I did Tony Iommi. I did Pete Townsend. Who else? I have Eric Clapton ready to go, but I've done so many music biographies I kind of want to take a break. Did Chuck Klosterman's book of essays. I found nonfiction's even better because it's somebody just kind of talking to you. I did Bob Odenkirk's new book of essays. So I haven't done a lot of novels on audio, but I really love the biographies.
Yeah, I remember being like a kid. My grandma used to really be, we were all into like Harry Potter, and she had the audiobooks for it. And this awesome dude, I don't even remember the guy's name. He's like British
Jim Dial.
Is that him?
Jim Dale. Yeah, my dad has all those, and we listen to all those. Yeah,
so good.
He does all the character voices.
He does different. Yeah, and it's like, so that's kind of like what I was kind of looking for. And you know, like I said, I listen to the whole thing because I don't want to start it and not finish it because I'm an idiot. But that one book was terrible. Brave New World. Jurassic Park, like I said, it's awesome to the point where I'm going on like the Chicago Public Library's like website to have different audiobooks sent to the library that they didn't have, because it's like, yeah, I don't want to waste any time. I want to keep it going. So if you have a long commute and you are listening to the radio and you're frustrated, totally just switch to audiobooks. It's so much better. And, you know, like I said, it's actually to the point where, like, it used to drive me crazy looking for parking in my neighborhood because it could take up towards, like, 20 minutes. Now I'm like, this isn't so bad. I can keep looking.
This would be the perfect time for you to do Lord of the Rings.
It's
a good audiobook too.
Is it? Because that's the only way I'd be able to. Tried reading The Hobbit, and it's like a VCR manual. I can't read it. It's so boring.
It's easier Audible because you don't mind the sidebars as much.
Yeah.
And also, I think now we're in a post Peter Jackson movie.
Right.
You're not so worried about what the plot's going to be. You're like, oh, I know. You know, I know Gollum is coming in this chapter.
Yeah.
So you're not anticipating when he starts talking about like the food they prepare and he starts singing in Elvish. You're not as impatient because you're like, well, I'm not worrying about what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
So if you really want to immerse yourself in the world of Middle Earth, and I enjoy those almost as much as I enjoy the Harry Potter books on Audible. I think this would be a good time to try them.
Yeah, I think I am a little disappointed. I was six when Jurassic Park came out, and I'm like, oh, I wish I read the book first, because there's a lot of things that's like somebody in the book is talking to Alan Grant, and they're like, why is the guy who runs InGen, why is he stockpiling amber? Oh, I have no idea. They're like trying to figure out like what he's doing with all this like amber.
This is more of a mystery.
It kind of starts out as like a mystery. They don't know what John Hammond's doing yet, so they're trying to figure out, well, he has the largest private collection of amber in the world. He's buying all this because that's where the mosquitoes are for the dinosaurs. I know why he's doing it. In the book, they're like, oh, we can't figure it out. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if I would have been able to figure this out as an 8-year-old. You know, like, what the fuck? I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, you knew dinosaurs were coming.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the trick of, like, what the amber specifically was for would have been a nice mystery in the 80s, in 86 or whenever this book was written, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I recommend audiobooks in general.
Yeah, mine is somewhat connected, but very weird. I was in a vinyl record store, and they're popping up all over. I was in a really interesting one. I think it's called Mile Long Records in Wheaton. And Chris Brunkel has been on the show, and one of my other friends are big vinyl collectors. I am not. I went digital. I never went back. I appreciate guys that are into records and buying really nice turntables and having tubes in the preamps. I understand why they're doing it. I'm not going back. But as we went there, we were flipping through the records, and one of the guys pointed out this record. He said, "Have you ever seen this record before?" I said, no, I have no idea what it is. And it was called Lucifer's Friend. And it was 1970, and he's like, "Well, you like Black Sabbath." He's like, "You got to hear this. This is a German band that was doing it before Black Sabbath."
Yeah.
And he's one of those guys, you know, those guys who in any collection of like where you're like, "I really like this." And there's always that guy who goes, "No, this guy did it first and he did it better."
Yeah.
You know, it's like people, the guys who get you into Jack Kirby.
Right.
Like tell you not to look at John Byrne.
Right.
You know, he's
right.
One of those guys. And there's a lot of value in those guys.
Sure.
So
they are a wealth of information.
Yeah, so I went back, went on Spotify, which I like a lot, and listened to Lucifer. No, I'm sorry, I didn't go on Spotify. I went on YouTube. And YouTube, a lot of people post full albums, and they'll post the music, and they'll just have a picture of the record cover up the whole time.
Yeah.
It's not a video. So I was listening to Lucifer's Friend on YouTube, and I thought it was great. And it is like Black Sabbath, but there's also an organ in it, so it's kind of like Deep Purple. So if you're into like really classic metal like I am, really liked it. But that's not even my recommendation. Lucifer's Friend is great.
Check it out.
First album, it's just called Lucifer's Friend. It's got the craziest album cover ever, too. But the YouTube feature, which I found annoying before, actually did the best thing for me it's ever done. Listen to the whole album, and now YouTube kind of queues up another video.
Yeah.
You know, and I always found that irritating. I'm like, no, I went to find this video. I'm not just sitting here passively, randomly watching whatever video you decide to shove in my face.
Yeah.
Go away. But so I listened to the full album, and then it started loading this other album called Gun. And it was this album in 1968, and it had this crazy Roger Dean, like these red demons all over the place.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my friend Brian, and he's like, "So what do you think of Lucifer's Friend?" I'm like, "Yeah, that album's really good." And it starts loading, and I'm like, "What's this thing?" And the first song came on, which is called Race for the Devil.
Okay.
And my jaw hit the floor. It was like, I'm a huge fan of Cream, like the Eric Clapton band that did White Room and Sunshine of Your Love.
Okay.
Kind of the heavy, spacey, psychedelic stuff before he got real bluesy. They're one of my favorite bands, and I always assumed, oh, this band kind of lives on its own. Led Zeppelin was a different thing. Yardbirds were a different thing. This band, Gun, was just like that, just crazy, psychedelic, freak-out solos.
Yeah.
And loved it. Found one TV appearance they ever made, and the guy looks like Andre the Giant playing a guitar.
That is awesome.
It's so awesome. It's on my page. I'll put it on the Cavanated Comics page. Found out they only made two albums. They made one in 68, one in 69, and broke up. They are so not known that they're not on iTunes. They're not on Spotify.
Yeah.
They weren't even on BitTorrent. Like I went on BitTorrent, found the torrent. No one is seeding it.
Yeah.
Nobody has this damn thing. Finally went on Amazon, and there was a third party that sold both CDs. Not even a download. Amazon doesn't have it for download.
Yeah.
They sold both CDs for $13. I was like, give me the damn CDs.
Yeah.
But then I went back on YouTube today and found their second album, which is called Gunsight. And played that on YouTube, and all those songs were great. So this was the first time I've ever discovered a band through YouTube.
Yeah, like you said, it's like you said, they just loaded this thing.
As obscure as possible. Basically, some guy, and the really interesting thing was some guy decided to upload it just with a picture of the album cover, and the drummer for the band left a comment. Was like, "Hey, everybody, thanks for listening to my album."
Wow.
I've never really thought of YouTube as being a social network.
Yeah.
Because the comments are usually horrible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I've also really never thought of it as being a place to discover anything. YouTube has always been, hey, I posted this on Facebook from YouTube. Or I go in and I put in a search.
Yeah.
It's
always a thing to go find like a clip of a movie. Like, oh, this is a really funny part of this movie. You know, it's never...
Yeah,
like you said, you've never connected with anybody through YouTube. It's not like a thing.
Right,
you do.
And this was the first time YouTube itself, not somebody pointed me to YouTube, went, "Hey, look at this." And I went, That's amazing.
Yeah, thanks, YouTube.
Yeah, so like I said, I just bought the CDs, and in fact, after I posted the song, the rhythm guitarist in my band Mysterio was like, hey, can we do this song? I was like, you're goddamn right we can do this.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, if you're exploring on YouTube, sometimes just let that feature load, see what happens.
See what happens.
Yeah, so if you want to follow me, I'm on Not At My Book in Twitter. I believe I posted Gun today on Twitter. Getting a lot of new followers, so thank you guys. A lot of podcasts. I'm seeing like a couple of new people every day, which for me is a lot.
Yeah.
Like I think I've gotten like 100 people in the last couple of weeks, which for me is a lot. So thank you guys. Please stick around. I try to post stuff. I'm always posting stuff about the show. Big thing about the show, I have neglected to mention before now, if you know of the Geek Bar Beta, Brittany Yantos used to work there. She's been on our show a few times. It's become this kind of hub in Chicago for geeky things that happen. They've got a lot of signature drinks, but they're also having a performance space. We are giving a talk at the Geek Bar Beta Tuesday, October 13th. Steve and I will be there. Elliot Serrano, a very good friend of the show,
yep,
always great. We'll be talking about the worst comic book movies ever made. We're going to figure out
technological... Wait, the three of us are talking about
that? The three of us are talking about it. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, Elliot's doing it with us. Did I not tell you this?
I'm sure you did, and I'm just terrible at knowing what is coming in the future.
But we'll be there, so please stop by and see us. We'll be there, I believe. It starts at 6, between 6 and 7. I will put out a more formal invite and put out more formal things on our Facebook page, so check there. But they're doing something every Tuesday. We were invited by Dr. Paul Bluth at DePaul University. He's a good friend of our show. He just did one last week, so there's going to be one every week. We're doing that, and of course, that is also the same week we'll be at ValorCon.
Yeah, that weekend is ValorCon.
Right. We'll be there that Saturday talking about Batman and video games. That'll be another one. We will record both of them, and you'll hear them later as podcasts, but if you want to come and see us, come on down. We'll give you a business card if you want to see what we look like. We love to meet people that have heard the show, and there's nothing we like better than meeting people we don't know.
Yeah, that's always interesting.
And if you want to listen to the show, we're on Stitcher. We are on iTunes. We are on caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. Please subscribe. Leave a review anywhere you can leave a review.
We'll find it.
We love to, yeah. Hit us up on Twitter. Steven will be at Chimera's Comics for the next 24 hours, which will be over by the time you hear this.
Yes.
But if you want to stop by anytime,
always at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Thank